Hi, this is Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares and the Harry Chapin Regional Food Bank, welcoming you back to another episode of our Breaking Bread podcast. Today in the studio, joining me is Long Island Cares Vice President for Government Affairs and Advocacy, Michael Haynes. And our very special guest in the studio today is New York State Assemblyman Fred Thiel of Sag Harbor. Fred, it's great to see you.
Paul, it's good to see you. And Mike, it's good to see you too. Thanks for having me.
Great. The audience loves you being here too.
Great to see you.
Good to see you all.
So, Assemblyman Thiel, the state legislative session is out for now. Was it a productive session? And what were you able to get in terms of your priorities for the region?
Well, you know, every session is a little bit different. This year certainly was that. And, you know, I think we had a late budget for the first time in about 10 years. And but I thought, you know, the budget process ended well substantively, but it really compressed the rest of the legislative session. This is one of those years where you really felt rushed in dealing with other legislative priorities. But, you know, for the most part, I thought it was a productive session. You always have some victories, you have some disappointments, but for today we'll focus on some of those victories. And water quality on Long Island has always been a major issue. And, you know, in the budget process, there was a lot of money for water quality infrastructure. We passed a bill for Suffolk County to have a water quality restoration program. They could have put it on the ballot this November. The county legislature hasn't done that yet. That's been a little bit controversial. You know, my other priorities certainly have, you know, on the East End have been housing. Housing has become a crisis issue, I think, across the country and on Long Island.
Absolutely, yeah.
But on the East End of Long Island, in particular, you know, we were able to get past the community housing fund to kind of mirror our community preservation fund to provide, you know, over the next, between now and 2050, could provide up to $600 million for affordable housing. And, you know, as we see in Newsday here in the last few days, there's a lot of focus on how expensive it is to live on Long Island. And I think affordability is an issue, and that comes to housing, utilities, food, which I'm sure we'll talk more about today.
I'm confident we will.
Yeah. And so, you know, the other issue is kind of a work in progress, even, you know, we've got, I'm a co-chair with Senator Kevin Thomas of a commission, a legislative commission on the future of LIPA. Oh. And, you know, the utility costs certainly and the failures and the, some of the shortcomings of our existing electric system has, you know, certainly been something we're focused on also. So, you know, if I was going to say overall, you know, the focus is really on affordability and people being able to stay here. I grew up on Long Island. It's, you know, I've been here all my life, but, you know, with each succeeding generation, it becomes harder and harder for people to stay here.
It is, and especially for young families who are trying to start out and perhaps buy a home on Long Island. It's simply cost prohibitive. And, you know, we're hearing more and more these days about seniors who are looking to sell their homes to downsize. Many of them are choosing to move into specialized housing programs, senior citizen community. Others are just, you know, looking for rental properties that are available in nice neighborhoods, maybe, you know, gated community or so. But when you look at the rents of $2,500 to $1,000 for a one-bedroom apartment, I mean, those are Manhattan prices. And yet, you know, people are finding it hard. And as you know, people that are living on the margin, paycheck to paycheck, very difficult to, you know, feel as if there's any kind of upward mobility for them on Long Island. I think Newsday did a pretty good job defining the problem and illustrating what we're going through in the region. But, you know, we're still dealing with things like not in my backyard, and no, this will take away from the value of the properties in the community. We don't want, you know, legal rental apartments. So what's the alternative? You wind up moving into an illegal apartment in someone's basement or the second floor of their Cape Cod. In addition to water quality and affordability of housing, what did your constituents say to you this year? You know, Assemblyman Thiel, you're going back to Albany. This is what we want. You know, these are issues of importance to us.
Well, in addition to housing and to water quality, I think, and again, I don't think this is unique to the East End, but there's a lot of focus on the need for transportation alternatives, right, too. Another part of living on Long Island, especially on the East End, is public transit is in short supply. And, you know, we've started a program with the Long Island Railroad. It's called the South Fork Commuter Connection, mm-hmm, where workers can get on the train in Spionk or West Hampton and Hampton Bays and get to their jobs on the South Fork. Just the beginning parts of that. But we've had it now for several years, and it was interrupted during the pandemic, but we started again last year, and ridership continues to grow, and mm-hmm, we need, you know, more infrastructure, more trains, sure, if it's going to be real. But certainly, you know, transportation is another big issue, I think, you know, for folks along the East End, and you know, those are education, you know, and mm-hmm, education certainly also, or, you know, the local school districts, always one of the biggest issues that comes up every year in Albany as part of the budget is aid to education. Mm-hmm. And ironically, in all my years in Albany, and I'm in my 15th term, usually, wow, the most controversial is how to divvy up the pie as far as a state aid to education, mm-hmm, you know, between upstate New York City and Long Island. And this year we fully funded the education formula. It was over a 3-year period. Mm-hmm. So this was a year when actually it was the first thing that got done was aid to education, but, you know, always of critical importance.
And that sort of sets the stage for the legislative session when you can deliver such support for education. And, you know, living in a region where we have, I don't know, 124, 126 independent school districts, you know, how do you provide, you know, for each of them in a way that, from what I've seen with school budgets this year, people were not piercing the tax cap. They were keeping their taxes less than 2%. I think 2 went over the cap and wound up getting defeated until they came back with a new budget. But, you know, one of the things that we're always interested in, we spoke about food earlier on, is the number of school districts on Long Island that have students above 50% of their entire school population, student population, who are eligible for the free or reduced breakfast or lunch program. And, you know, that affects most of the school districts on Long Island. And I think people would be surprised to hear, even in districts on the South Fork and the North Fork, there are children that are eligible for these programs. The school districts are doing an excellent job providing that kind of support. In providing additional state aid to the school districts, that's one of the areas that they can certainly invest the money in.
Well, you know, first of all, I think one of my jobs representing the East End of Long Island, mm-hmm, and I've got 4 of the 5 East End towns, Southold, East Hampton, Shelter Island, and Southampton, is to, you know, educate and advocate to people, you know, even in Western Suffolk, this isn't just in the city of New York or upstate, mm-hmm, they have a perception of the Hamptons, of, yeah, the East End of Long, mm-hmm, Island. You know, they think it's the lifestyle of styles of the rich and famous. Right. We all get into our BMWs and from our mansions on the ocean and, you know, go to our jobs paying their, you know, 6 or 7-figure mm-hmm incomes. And there really isn't the understanding that the East End is a much more diverse place than people think it is. You know, the summer community, although it's become more than just summer these days, yeah, you know, that's a slice of life on the East End. You know, what you see on page 6 of the, mm-hmm, New York Post or, sure, whatever, you know, that is, or Dan's papers out, mm-hmm, on the East End, that is part of the East End, but it is one slice of the pie on the, right, East End. And, you know, when we're talking about the budget, we're talking about pre-K programs or free and reduced lunch programs. Mm-hmm. And I indicate to my colleagues who are less familiar with the East End that, you know, the Springs School District, the Hampton Bays, right, School District, that more than half the students are Hispanic, Latino mm-hmm. students. They don't, that's not their perception of the East End.
Right.
And when I tell them that when you look at the census numbers and you look at median family income, that the median family income on the East End is actually lower on the East End than it is in Western Suffolk or Nassau mm-hmm. County, it comes as a surprise to them. And so it is a very, it's a much more diverse community than people think.
Mm-hmm.
There are needs there that, you know, people don't quite understand, I think. And, you know, from talking to, you know, school district superintendents and working with them, and I've got 25 of those school districts, by the way.
That's quite a bit.
You know, the change in the demographics,
yeah.
especially over the last 10 to 15 to 20 mm-hmm. years, you know, the increase in English language learners, the increase in the, those that are eligible for free and reduced lunches has increased exponentially over that time frame. So, you know, I think maybe some of my colleagues were surprised to hear me arguing mm-hmm. vociferously for those programs. And of course, you know, I think we became aware of how important it is to make sure that our you know, K through 12 students don't go to school hungry, aren't hungry, because mm-hmm. the federal government provided those funds and provided that service during the pandemic. And then after the pandemic, when that program was ending, you know, my school superintendents, my school communities lobbied very hard for the legislature. So mm-hmm. For that, those programs. So we took a step forward this year. I mean, you know, we didn't fully fund this, but mm-hmm. we made a lot more school districts eligible, including a number of them in my district, to be able to take advantage of funding for, you know, free lunch mm-hmm. programs.
And it's just one of those, you know, essential services that the children on the East End really do need. And as you so eloquently, you know, describe, the population and the demographics there is changing. Mike, you have a question for the Assemblyman?
Before my question, I want to make a comment.
it's going to be a good one, I hear.
I believe, being a humble public servant, the Assemblyman downplayed his role, and he downplayed the nature of the true accomplishment this past legislative session had. I've been doing this alongside Paul for 14 years. There were years where the thought of even asking for another $1 million in hunger prevention funding was a non-starter. When he's talking about what he was able to accomplish with his colleagues on both sides of the aisle in both houses, they were able to get $134 million to expand access to school meals. This past legislative session was the most significant progress I have seen in the fight to end hunger for everyone, but especially our children. The hunger prevention funding, which we administer for this region, was under attack. It was proposed to be cut by $22 million. They came together and got that $22 million back. And also, Nourish New York was unclear as to whether or not it would see an increase, a decrease, or stay the same, but they preserved that funding. And for years where $500,000 or $1 million in extra hunger funding was just not a reality, to get $134 million for kids to ensure that they eat when the federal government is turning their back on these kids, which they admitted for 2.5, 3 years needed this food, I think it's unbelievable. It's the proudest I've ever been to be at Long Island Cares.
And we are.
Well, and I just have to say that it was.
You're holding you responsible for this.
Well, I'm glad to be held responsible for this. But, you know, I just need to point out, I just remember, you know, last February, every year, Eastern Suffolk BOCES sponsors a legislative breakfast where mm-hmm. they get to present their priorities to us. And, you know, they were strong and unanimous. You know, this you know, the best success has come from the grassroots up. And this was the schools advocating for this. I think what was most important wasn't just the advocacy, but I think everybody, you know, there wasn't a lot of silver linings from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It was
right.
a horrible, difficult 3-year period plus for people to go through. But one of the things people did see was the benefits that came from the federal government providing this funding for free lunches. So, you know, when we had the breakfast at Longwood, you had school superintendents and school board members, you know, telling us the successes of this program. And, you know, it doesn't happen often, but it was one of those cases where, you know, all of us on the panel, you know, Democrats and Republicans, Senate and the Assembly, you know, there was no argument over this. It truly was a bipartisan issue. And it also, you know, transcended geography. This was important on Long Island. It was important upstate.
Sure.
It was important in the city of New York. So, you know, there was not just consensus, there was unanimity about expanding this program. You know, the only issue was trying to where was the funding going to come from?
Right.
It's not a small number, as you mentioned. And I think if there was, you know, any regret is that we would have liked to have gone even further. But, you know, it was a good accomplishment. Hopefully we've cemented this expansion for free lunches. And, you know, there may be some difficult budget years ahead. But, you know, we've got it now in the base of our education funding. And hopefully we can not just keep that level of funding, like you mentioned with some of the other programs, like for food. But that hopefully we will have the opportunity to expand it in the future.
We can only hope. That's the important part. Whoop. Assemblyman Thiel, that has nothing to do with you. It just means that our time is about to come to an end. I want to thank you so much for joining us today in the studio.
Well, thank you. I thought it was something I said or did, but sometimes time runs out on us.
When you're having a good time and you're speaking about important issues, the time goes fast. And, you know, on the podcast these days, we got 15 minutes to state our case. So it really has been wonderful to have you here today. I want to thank New York State Assemblyman Fred Thiel for being our guest today on the Breaking Bread podcast. I want to thank Mike Haynes, our Vice President for Government Affairs and Advocacy, for joining us as well. And last but not least, I want to thank you, those of you that tune into our podcast, those of you that subscribe to it. We can be found on anywhere you listen to your podcast, on Apple, on Spotify, on Anchor Podcasts. So until next time, this is Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Regional Food Bank. We're a big country. We've got one people. Let's take care of each other. See you next time.